It was around 12 on a Friday night, and a young woman out with her friends in Bonifacio Global City was done letting off steam after a stressful week at work. As far as her friends and her family waiting at home knew, she had left BGC to drive herself home, but she was never heard from again after 1 in the morning. This is the story of Kay Davantes, an advertising executive who in 2013 was abducted and senselessly murdered by an amateur robbery group. Christelle Davantes was born on November 5, 1987 in the city of Alcobar in Saudi Arabia. Her parents, Beth Morines and Pedro Davantes Jr., were working there as a nurse and an accountant respectively, but when their daughter was just a few months old, they flew her to the Philippines to live with her maternal relatives in Capiz, brought her back to Saudi Arabia for her elementary schooling, then finally moved her to Metro Manila for good. She stayed with her Aunt Ella and Uncle Bob in a gated community called Moonwalk Village in Las Piñas, and she looked after her younger siblings Lizette and Joshua while their parents worked overseas. Her aunt and uncle called her Katel, while her sister Lizette, who saw her as a second mother, fondly referred to her as Nang or Nanang. To her friends, however, she was known by her nickname Kay. Kay grew up to be a beautiful young woman who was responsible, smart, and a natural-born leader, qualities which helped her in her studies and career. She graduated in 2008 from Southville Foreign University with a bachelor's degree in business administration, major in marketing management. Immediately after, she worked as a digital campaign associate for SnapWorks Digital, where she was promoted to digital marketing specialist in just 6 months. She continued to work for the same company before going to graduate school in 2009 at De La Salle University, Manila, where she would meet her future fiancé, Benedict Ong. In 2011, Kay decided to return to work while still studying, and she landed the job of senior account manager for the international company she had always wanted to work for, top marketing agency MRM McCann, whose Philippine office is in Bonifacio Global City, Taguig. In 2013, she celebrated her second year anniversary at her new company. She was just a thesis defense away from obtaining her master's degree in marketing communications, and she was engaged to be married on May 29 the following year. At the age of 25, she seemed to have a bright future ahead of her, but that was suddenly extinguished one early morning in September. Kay left her office at around 10 p.m. on September 6, and she texted her Aunt Ella that she was about to go home. Since it was a Friday though, she decided on a whim to go with 8 of her MRM McCann friends to the Scarlet Wine Lounge and then to Aracama Restaurant, which were both in BGC. She parted ways with her friends at around midnight, texting her Aunt Ella more definitively that she was on her way home, but she was never heard from again after 1 a.m. There was no text or call to her friends or fiancé to say she had returned to Las Piñas safely, and her Aunt Ella and sister Lizette, who were waiting for her at home, never saw her arrive either. At 3:30 a.m., more than 2 hours after Kay should have gotten home, Lizette called Kay's fiancé Benedict, but he still hadn't heard from Kay either. Panicking, they posted on Facebook and went to several hospitals and police stations to find out where she was. Their worst fears were confirmed in a few hours when they heard that Kay had been found murdered in a place notorious for being the dumping ground of criminals. Kay's untimely death immediately made headlines, especially after an open letter calling for justice was sent by the Advertising Board of the Philippines to the Office of the President, and a Facebook page called Justice for Kay quickly garnered more than 70,000 likes. Her murder became such a high-profile case that President Benigno Aquino III himself called for its prompt investigation by the National Bureau of Investigation and the Philippine National Police. According to the initial investigation, Kay was found at 6 a.m. on September 7 under the Tibagan Bridge in Barangay Sabutan, Silang, Cavite. This location was an hour away from both Moonwalk Village where she lived and BGC where she was last seen. Kay's mouth was gagged with a Sean Curvin man's handkerchief, and her hands were tied behind her back with a car seatbelt. There were 5 stab wounds on her body, 3 of them on her neck, which also had ligature marks. A kitchen knife that seemed to match the stab wounds was found nearby, as well as a laptop charger whose cord may have been used for strangulation. Because there was little blood on and around the body, it was thought that Kay might have been killed somewhere else, and Tibagan Bridge was only the dumping site. The car Kay was supposed to be driving home was a metallic beige Toyota Altis with license plate number PIM966, but it wasn't anywhere near the location of her body, so investigators leaned more towards a carjacking gone wrong as the cause of death. They still had no suspects, however, so to move the case forward, the PNP and the city government of Las Piñas put up a reward of 200,000 pesos, or almost $4,000 in today's money, for information that will lead to the arrest of Kay's murderer. Task Force K was also formed, made up of different police units and headed by Chief Superintendent Christopher Laksa. Through the task group's hotline, police and Kay's family asked the public to submit any leads that they may have. Kay's parents Pedro and Beth came home from Saudi Arabia on September 9, 2 days after their eldest daughter's death. They fully cooperated with the investigation, but when it came to interviews with the media, they asked Pedro's brother Vincent, who lived in Metro Manila, to be the family spokesperson. According to Vincent, although Kay was close with her family, she wasn't the type to share much about her personal life, so he couldn't say whether anyone may have had enough of a grudge against her to cause her death. He also said that Kay had been driving for a while, but mostly just within Las Piñas. She had only taken her car outside her home city a few times before. At around midnight of September 15, 1 week after Kay's death, the blaring of a car alarm woke up the neighborhood of Camellia Homes in Barangay Pamplona 3, Las Piñas. The noise, as well as thick smoke, came from a metallic beige Toyota Altis at the dead end of Nickel Street inside the gated subdivision. Village watchmen who first came to the scene were able to remove the engine battery through the front hood of the car to prevent a possible explosion. Although the vehicle no longer had license plates, it was later identified to be Kay Davantes' missing car through the personal items inside. The Toyota Altis smelled strongly of diesel and bore signs of an attempt to burn it from inside. The dashboard had been deformed by the heat. Several articles of clothing were scattered about, soaked in diesel, some with burn marks on them. The clothes ranged from women's shorts and undergarments, an El Shaddai handkerchief, and infant and children's wear, which were all too random to seem like they were Kay's, so investigators who came to the scene thought they may have been pulled from a clothesline or a thrift store to serve as kindling for the fire. The seats of the car had been removed, possibly to eliminate DNA evidence, although fingerprints and blood samples from the seatbelts were still lifted from inside the car. According to nearby residents, the vehicle had been parked there since around 9 a.m. of the previous day. The place where it was abandoned, the dead end of a street at the corner of a subdivision with many confusing roundabouts, suggested to investigators that whoever left it there was familiar with the area. The following day, on September 16, Las Piñas City Mayor Vergel Aguilar raised the reward to 500,000 pesos. That evening, the office of the president added 2 million pesos to the bounty, bringing it up to 2.5 million pesos, or almost $50,000 in today's money. Investigators looked at security videos from the gates of Moonwalk Village and Kay's regular routes driving to and from her house. They saw Kay's Toyota Altis enter the South Luzon Expressway at 1:19 a.m. of September 7 and exit the Philinvest Gate at 1:31 a.m. The car passed through the Moonwalk Village Gate at 1:41 a.m. and left the subdivision 10 minutes later at 1:51. But this time, it was followed by a red Honda City, which had entered Moonwalk Village just 17 minutes earlier. Visible through an open window of the Honda was a young man seated in the back, suggesting there were multiple passengers inside. The first member of this group of suspects was 19-year-old construction worker Samuel Decimo, who was arrested by the NBI based on a tip from a man named Rex. According to Rex, his girlfriend on September 8 went to her friend Anita's house, and there Anita casually told the story of her live-in partner, who was Decimo, robbing and killing a girl just a day before. The story was casually repeated by Decimo himself when he joined the two women for dinner. Acting upon this tip, NBI investigators conducted surveillance operations on Decimo, and on September 20, they learned that he had held up a passenger jeepney earlier that day in Bacoor, Cavite. They came upon a knife-wielding Decimo in his house at Villa Esperanza, Molino, Bacoor. After they arrested him, they brought him to the Department of Justice in Manila for inquest proceedings, and then to the NBI headquarters, where he confessed to the crime in front of the media. Decimo said he was desperate for money because his live-in partner Anita had recently given birth. He joined the group that unfortunately ended up killing Kay, but their only intent that night was to rob someone, anyone, and they happened to come across Kay as she was opening the gate to her house. Decimo gave investigators the names of his five accomplices, and two of them were immediately arrested the following day. 18-year-old Lloyd Benedict Enriquez in Cupang, Muntinlupa, and 30-year-old Reggie Jojo Diel in Las Piñas, who was convinced by his father to surrender. 3 days later, 23-year-old Jomar Pepito, who was hiding in Amadeo, Cavite, was accompanied by his mother and grandmother as he surrendered to Cavite Governor John Vicremulla. It would later come out that Pepito's girlfriend Sheila Marie Villa was the owner of the red Honda City, and the car had a Camellia Homes resident sticker because that was where she lived. The final suspect to be arrested was 19-year-old Kelvin Jorek Evangelista, who initially evaded arrest in Cupang, Muntinlupa. He was apprehended in the early hours of September 25 at a bus terminal in Cabanatuan City as he was about to flee to the province of Aurora. Only one member of the gang remained at large, a certain Baser Minalang, who was in the same age range as the others. But with 5 out of 6 already arrested, investigators were able to get a clearer picture of the incident. The group was an amateur robbery gang from Cavite, which operated in the province and the southern part of Metro Manila. At around 10 p.m. of September 6, the men met in their home city of Bacoor, Cavite, specifically in Villa Esperanza, where Samuel Decimo lived. Armed with some knives and a fake gun, they got into the red Honda City, which Pepito borrowed from his girlfriend. They drove to Las Piñas to look for a victim, entering Moonwalk Village at 1:31 a.m. as shown in the security footage taken at the gate. Inside the subdivision, they tailed a black car with a female driver, but upon seeing a man open the gate of their house for her, they drove away to look for another victim. That was when they saw Kay Davantes getting out of her car across the road from her house. Three of them went after Kay as she was about to open the gate to her house. Jorek Evangelista pointed a fake gun at her while Jojo Diel and Baser Minalang forced her back into her car at knife point. A few neighborhood dogs began barking at that moment, but before the commotion could get any louder, Evangelista, Diel, and Minalang sped off in Kay's car with their captive, followed by the rest of the group inside the Honda City. The two cars headed for Tagaytay, Cavite, and as they drove, the men with Kay gagged her with a handkerchief and tied her hands with a seatbelt. Kay, who had taken karate and boxing classes, attempted to put up a fight, but the men found her laptop charger in the car, wound its cable around her neck, and choked her with it. They considered sexually abusing her, but ultimately decided against it, reminding each other that their only goal for the night was money. Since Kay could identify them and their car, however, they were left with no choice but to kill her. They stopped on Tibagan Bridge in Barangay Sabutan, Silang, and there Decimo stabbed Kay repeatedly with a knife, accidentally wounding his hand in the process. They then threw her off the bridge and drove back the way they came, and according to Decimo, he was not even sure she was already dead. The men cleaned Kay's car with soap, but they couldn't sell it because their buyer found out it was stolen, so they decided to burn it since the media had reported the car missing anyway. They took 3,000 pesos or the equivalent of $60 from Kay's wallet, and they sold her gadgets, which were a Toshiba laptop, iPhone, and BlackBerry, for 11,000 pesos worth of clothing. Though the laptop had already been reformatted, the stolen electronics were recovered by the NBI from a thrift store in Ilabang, Muntinlupa, and they were later confirmed by Kay's siblings Lizette and Joshua as belonging to their sister. Although Baser Minalang still hadn't been arrested, the six suspects were charged with qualified carjacking and robbery with homicide. Testimonies from the thrift store manager and his daughter identified Samuel Decimo as the one who sold them the stolen electronics, and DNA analysis proved that the blood sample from Kay's car was Decimo's. Jojo Diel, during the course of the trial, took the deal to become a state witness, and even though no one but Decimo admitted to the murder, Diel's testimony, combined with that of Pepito's girlfriend who owned the red Honda City, proved the involvement of everyone in the crime. Justice was handed down 6 years later on November 15, 2019, shortly after Kay would have celebrated her 32nd birthday. Judge Salvador Timbang Jr. of the Las Piñas Regional Trial Court Branch 253 found Lloyd Benedict Enriquez, Samuel Decimo, Kelvin Jorek Evangelista, and Jomar Pepito all equally guilty of robbery with homicide. The four were sentenced to reclusión perpetua or a maximum of 40 years in prison, and they were ordered to jointly and severally pay the Devantes family 50,000 pesos as death indemnity, 50,000 pesos as moral damages, and 25,000 pesos as temperate damages. Despite the fact that Basar Minalang is still at large as of this recording, the resolution of this case in only a matter of weeks was a testament to the city of Las Piñas having one of the country's highest crime solution efficiency rates. But there was talk of competition between the PNP and the NBI, which people, including the Devantes family, thought might have prevented what could have been a smoother and even quicker investigation. There were also rumors that the closure of the case was expedited so investigators could get their hands on the 2.5 million peso reward. But both the PNP and the NBI deny these allegations. There's no information online whether Rex received the reward for his tip-off about Samuel Decimo. As written by Benning Batigas in an opinion piece for the Filipino Star Ngayon, the money, according to Chief Superintendent Laksa who headed Task Force K, was to be given to victims and evacuees of the 2013 Zamboanga standoff. No other online publication, however, has reported on this matter. K. Devantes was laid to rest on September 15, 2013 at the Manila Memorial Park. A senseless act of violence may have abruptly ended her life, but her memory lives on for those she had touched with her kindness. A barangay captain recalled at her wake how when Kay would sometimes come home late in the evening, she would stop to give village watchmen cash for coffee for their patrol duty. It was unfortunate none of these watchmen were around that final time Kay went home late at night. To support Stories After Dark, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also suggest cases or send personal stories to storiesafterdarkph@gmail.com and become an official patron at patreon.com/storiesafterdark. All of the links are in the episode description. Thank you for listening.